Hello and welcome to At Home This Morning, a magazine programme for older listeners, which we hope will also be of interest to the not so old. I'm Richard Davis, and I hope you'll stay with me for the next hour. Coming up in that time, we'll be hearing from an organisation called Smart Energy GB about schemes that exist to help you if you're having problems with your energy bills during the current coronavirus crisis. We'll also be hearing from an organisation who are interested in changing the way that our children are educated, and finding out about that strange institution, the community pub, of which there happens to be one in Brighton, and about the Meals on Wheels service that they're running at the moment for their community. As usual, we'll be giving out various phone numbers, email addresses and website addresses during the course of the programme, so you may like to have a pencil and paper handy so that you can write them down. So let's get started by hearing about the measures that are available to help you if you're having trouble paying your energy bills in the current crisis. It's part of a scheme that's been put in place by an organisation called Smart Energy GB. To find out more about it, Chris English spoke to Robert Cheesewright. And he began by asking Robert to tell him what Smart Energy GB is.
We're the national campaign for the smart meter rollout, and we're trying to explain everyone how smart meters can help you get your own energy under control, but also help people with climate change. But actually, for this campaign, we're not really talking about smart meters at all. What we're interested in is, you know, how are people coping with their energy usage more generally when they're locked down or working from home? Because we've done some research, and we've worked with National Energy Action, who are a fuel poverty charity, and we found that actually, you know, a lot of people are finding that they're having to pay much more attention to their outgoings, either because their income has gone down or because their energy bills have gone up, because they're at home so much more than they used to be.
Should people change supplier? Because a lot of particularly older people can't be bothered with it. They can't think it's worth doing. But is it?
It always is. It's always worth looking to see if you can change supplier. And it's one of a number of things you can do. And you're right, sometimes age is a factor. I know that my dad, he always believed that loyalty was the right thing to do. And he stuck with his insurance company and his energy company and for years. And we explained to him that it doesn't really work like that anymore. And they use loss leaders. So they charge less to new people and then recoup that on people that have stuck around for a long time. So you're actually on a much less good deal if you're not switching regularly. But that's one thing you can do, and it's really important that people do switch regularly. But you can also, you know, take control in your own home, switch off appliances at the plug rather than keeping on standby, you know, dry clothes outside rather than using the tumble dryer. You can cook using the microwave for most things now rather than the oven, and that uses much less energy. So there's lots of little ways you can make your money go further and use less energy.
And how can people find out more?
So there's lots of things where you can get help. So if you go to smartenergygb.org, we've got lots of information on our website on how you can use less energy and the help is available. Because that's the other thing. If you're struggling with your bills, there's things you can do. So energy suppliers will not cut anyone off during the coronavirus crisis. They can often help you, whether they can set a new payment plan up, give you a payment holiday. If you're a prepayment customer, you can use someone else to top up for you. For instance, if you're shielding and you're not able to leave your home, someone can top up for you, or they can send you credit in the post. So there's lots of help available, either from your energy supplier. If you need to help with benefits, maybe you're not getting all the benefits you're entitled to, or you're just not sure, contact Citizens Advice. But all of that information, whether it's how to use less energy or where to get help from, we've collected it all at smartenergygb.org. So if you just remember smartenergygb.org, everything else can be found there.
Moving on, how long do you think this situation will last? I mean, we don't know, do we, how long lockdown is going to last in one form or another?
No, we really don't. And I think that's why it's really important that people do try to keep track of their energy, because it might be that, you know, in summer where we're not using as much gas with heating, it might be okay. But if we did have a second breakout in winter, our energy bills would become a real problem for us, and we obviously have no idea whether that will happen. I think one of the things that we aren't recommending yet is getting a smart meter, because suppliers aren't yet installing them. They will be doing safe installs soon, where they use protective equipment and they socially distance from the householder. But as soon as you can get a smart meter, I would recommend it, because that means you won't have to, if you're a prepayment customer, go out to the shops to top up. And that means that you're not having to go out and potentially risk getting infected. Or if you're a credit customer, they know how much you're using and they can offer you better payment plans and things like that. So if we do end up in a second lockdown situation, getting a smart meter before then would be a good idea. But for now, the best you can do is take those little steps to reduce your energy where you can. So things like, you know, avoiding the tumble dryer and turning stuff off of the plugs. And if you are struggling, seek help, whether it's from your supplier or from citizens' advice, do seek help.
What about those people that don't like the idea of a smart meter? Should they overcome it?
Yes, and I understand people's concerns with smart meters. It's new technology. There's been some concerns with the technology. The first generation had some issues. But that's all small stuff. We really do need to get smart meters because, well, if you're a prepayment customer in particular, at the moment, your meter could be under your bed, under the stairs. You might not be able to access it. The lights could go out. Then you have to go to the shop to top it up. It's much more expensive. If you're a credit customer, you get an in-home display that shows you in pounds and pence how much you're using, so you can keep more track of your energy. And that information helps the energy grid manage the power supply, and that helps us deal with climate change as well. So the need and the reasons to get a smart meter certainly outweigh the concerns that people may have. But those, I understand why people have concerns. But I hope everyone does get one, because particularly during things like coronavirus, they could really help some people.
Why are energy companies, be they suppliers or the generators, why do they want people to have smart meters?
The main reason that suppliers, well, there's two reasons. The cynical reason is that government is making them do it, because the government needs us to deal with climate change, and so they're having to. But the best energy suppliers understand that it's a better way of giving energy to your customers, because if you've got a customer who's maybe getting into energy debt and you can then provide them with support sooner, that's so much better than them getting into a worse situation. There are some really innovative suppliers that are offering tariffs that when energy is cheap, so for instance, over the last few months, there's been so much solar generation because the sun's been shining and we've had lovely weather and a lot of wind, that energy has been so cheap to generate, it's actually better to pay us to use that energy. And people with smart meters have been paid to use energy. So I've got one, and I was paid to use energy last weekend during the bank holiday weekend. And that sounds incredible, doesn't it? So we all pay for our energy, and it's quite expensive, and we don't often know how much it is. Well, thousands of us were paid to use that last weekend because of smart meters, and because of we need to balance our supply and demand across the country better owing to climate change. So that it helps our energy system is the short answer. It helps us keep the lights on, and it helps us keep bills down, and it helps us help the planet.
Robert, thanks very much for joining us, and remind us of those contact details where people can find out more information.
Yeah, so if you want to find out more about how you can get your energy under control, and that's whether you want a smart meter or not, or if you want to find out where you can get more help, please come to smartenergygb.org.
Chris English was talking to Robert Cheesewright of Smart Energy GB. If you'd like more information, you can go to their website, which is simply smartenergygb.org. That's smartenergygb, typed all as one word, with no spaces, .org. Robert Cheesewright didn't give a phone number, but looking on their website, I've managed to find one, which is 020-3019-1000. That's 020-3019-1000. Well, now Chris English is also responsible for the second item in our programme today, and here he is to introduce it.
Schools in England have been closed for months because of COVID-19 and the pandemic. But children in reception year 1 and 6 in England have been able to already get back to school. So what will the school system of the future look like? Well, one of the options being put forward by the Edge Foundation. And joining us now is Ollie Newton. Good morning, Ollie.
Good morning. It's lovely to talk to you.
First of all, what exactly is the Edge Foundation?
Thanks, Chris. Edge is an independent charity kind of working here across the UK, trying to make education more relevant to the 21st century. So we look at things like trying to get employers and community organisations working really closely with schools, helping to bring the curriculum alive, and starting to think about helping young people to develop skills like problem solving, teamwork and communication, as well as getting those exam certificates.
Now, of course, a lot of parents have been self-teaching. Is that a good idea?
Yeah, I think, parents, grandparents have all been involved in education more closely than they have been for a long while over the last kind of couple of months. And I think really that's helped to provide parents and families with more of an insight into education than they've had perhaps in recent years. So the stats that we're publishing today really are about understanding how parents and teachers' views of education have changed over this period. And really what they're saying is that there's a big appetite for change. Two-thirds of parents, three-quarters of teachers wanting to change education following the pandemic, but also a really clear recipe for that change. So more than 90% of them saying they want more of a focus on things like critical thinking, problem solving, communications, but also some of those values that have been so important during lockdown: kindness, empathy, community cohesion.
You talked then about the kindness and empathy. I mean, that's really been coming to the fore, hasn't it, with people seeming to be much caring for each other. Is that something that you think will continue?
I really hope so, but I think we all have to make an active effort to try and help that to continue. Education is just one of those places. But I think it absolutely is possible for schools to have a key role in that. Take one example. One of our schools that we work with looks at working through different projects and solving problems to help to teach their kids. One of the partnerships they made recently was with a local care home looking after older people with dementia, and they helped all of the children in the school to become dementia friends. Each of them kind of adopted an older person in the home and vice versa. They got to know them, and then they made a shoebox of items and stories from their life. So that was kind of something that brought together lots of their curriculum, you know, the creative side of design, but also it made them have the opportunity of meeting someone from a different generation, understanding people with different kind of issues around communication, and generally kind of help them to kind of develop some broader skills that will come in useful throughout their lives.
I mean, one of the things that we've all missed is our grandchildren. Can we do something about that now that lockdown is ending?
My heart goes out to all of those parents and grandparents. I know it's really tough. You know, I've missed seeing family as well. I think in terms of kind of the practical side, obviously really hoping that things move on in a positive direction with the lockdown, and we're all able to kind of get together face to face again soon. And it's been amazing to see kind of, you know, all different generations really using technology to try and connect as much as we can.
Yes, I mean, we're talking on Zoom, and I know that's been an invaluable tool for lots of people that are separated from their loved ones. So is that, again, do you think that's going to continue?
Yeah, I think hopefully the kind of positive side is something that we can continue to use. It's never going to be a substitute for seeing our families face to face, but there are definitely things that can help. You know, lots of us have family living abroad or further afield. It can have perhaps kind of help to bridge the gap between physical meetings. And back in the education setting, you know, it's a real chance to help young people to meet people who they might not otherwise be able to. So take, for example, another school that we're working with at the moment on a project around climate change. Those kids are able to interact virtually with climate change activists who are working in South America, one of our colleagues who's working in Greenland, people that they would never have been able to meet from their, you know, from their classroom generally. But by using technology, we can introduce them to them and help them to inspire their project and their education.
So are you looking to change the complete curriculum?
What we're talking about is a kind of a change over a number of years. It's important to stress that. So we're not trying to kind of put an extra burden on heads and teachers as they start to reignite their school over the next few weeks. What we're talking about is a gradual change over a number of years. Yes, we do want to change the way that education works. It's not about saying that knowledge isn't important. Obviously, a base of knowledge is really important. But actually, some of the skills to interpret knowledge, to share it, to communicate, to solve problems, they're going to be more important in future years. And you don't get those by sitting on your own and revising, or sitting in an exam hall or kind of writing a script. So what we want to do is see kind of more practical hands-on opportunities, more employers and community organizations bringing curriculum to life, and more opportunities for kids to work in teams and solve problems, as well as simply rote learn information for exams.
Now, given that the return to school after the pandemic has been focused by the unions, so what are the unions' view on your views?
So yeah, good question. So teachers themselves have been part of this survey. So actually, interestingly, they were even more up for change than parents. So 78% of teachers who were surveyed were keen to kind of move education to a new direction. We work a lot with the teaching unions and they're very supportive of this approach too. I think the real irony here is that actually parents, teachers and businesses are all kind of pretty clear on what they want from the education system in terms of those broader skills, creativity, rather than just exam certificates. Really, it's just kind of some of the government advisors that are pushing the opposite direction back to a very kind of old fashioned a view of kind of chalk and talk, rote learning and exams being the be all and end all.
There's an old saying, isn't there? It's not what you know, it's who you know. Can that apply to education?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, we've probably all experienced times in our careers or, you know, our personal lives where we've, you know, made use of personal connections and been in the right place at the right time. And what we want to do is give every young person the chance to make those connections, whatever background they're from. So, you know, having local employers and community organisations into schools isn't just about bringing the curriculum alive. It's also about helping them to meet adults who have influential positions in their community, who they might kind of approach for work experience or careers advice in future. It's about kind of integrating all of that into the life of the school rather than seeing that as something separate from the curriculum.
Now, you're executive director of the Edge Foundation, which you say is a charity. So how does it get its funding?
So Edge has a small foundation, so a pot of money that was put aside when Edexcel sold the BTEC exams to Pearson about 15 years ago. So the money was put in trust to found a charity to try and promote new ways of educating and particularly to support technical education. So that's the principal way we get our money. We also do a small amount of funded research where we're looking at topics that that might help in this space. So what makes a really good apprenticeship? How might technical education be improved? So those are the kind of two sources of our funding.
You've talked about the Edge Foundation. You've talked about funding. So how do we get this actually into the classrooms?
Yeah, great question, Chris. So it's a twin track approach for us. So the first of those is that actually schools and colleges have a lot more freedom than people think to kind of get on and do some of this right now. And we work with some really great examples of schools and colleges around the country where they're already starting to integrate some of these ways of working. We want to help that to spread. And so we offer, you know, free training, free support to schools and colleges that are interested in this area. But we know it's really hard for them to push against some of the challenges of the current system that's kind of set from the top. And so we're also trying to support change there and influence politicians and policymakers to make a significant change. We've already seen a really positive move from Ofsted, the school inspectorate, over the last year to be much more open to this way of thinking. But we think that it's time for the government through the league tables and through things like their kind of curriculum measures like EBAC and Progress 8 to actually move away and say, actually, let's come on board with what businesses and parents and teachers are saying they want from the education system and allow for this kind of broader, more holistic approach.
And so how can parents and grandparents help?
Great question. So there's a whole range of different ways. I would say kind of talking to the schools of your grandchildren or your children and encouraging them to think about new ways of doing things is kind of one important way. Also, you've got a huge amount of knowledge from your kind of careers and past careers to bring as well. So why not kind of offer your time and support to the school as well? You might think about bringing a project or setting a problem using some of the context from your business or your kind of former business. That kind of experience of meeting people from different generations and using those kind of real life problems can really bring the curriculum to life. But it can also be really fun and lovely as an experience for us as adults too.
And Ollie, finally, where can people get more information?
We'd love to hear from you. So it's edge.co.uk is our website. And if you're on Twitter, it's at UK Edge. We'd love to hear your thoughts. And also if you have connections to schools and colleges, you know, we'd love to support and help them to think about these ways of doing things.
Ollie, that's great. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, Chris.
Chris English was talking to Ollie Newton of the Edge Foundation about their ideas for the reform of education. If you'd like to find out more, you can go to their website, which is edge.co.uk. It's very simple, edge.co.uk. And you can contact them by email, which is inquiry@edge.co.uk. That's inquiry@edge.co.uk. And their phone number is 020 7960 02079601540. That's 02079601540. Well, just recently I found out about an unusual establishment. It's called the Bevy, and it describes itself as a community pub, and it's located in Bevendean. And during the coronavirus lockdown, they've been providing their own version of a Meals on Wheels service to people in the local community. To find out more, I contacted Helen Jones, and I began by asking her just what is a community pub.
Oh, that's a really good question, Richard. So what is a community pub? It's very distinct from an ordinary pub because it is organised and run and managed by the community. There's a committee of people that have said they're interested in being involved. What that means is we're not run by a brewery and we can determine which way we go much more. The main thing to say is it's not purely a commercial enterprise. It's much more interested in the social community aspects of life.
When did your community group take the pub over?
We reopened in about 2015, but we've been about 3 years in the making. Basically, the Bevendean Hotel was a pub on the Bevendean / Morecambe estate since 1937. It got closed down somewhere around 2009-10, and actually the inside of it got demolished. And then our now chair, Warren Carter, called a meeting to say, well, why shouldn't we have a pub on our estate? And actually there was a really, really good response. And so from that, we formed a community group, and we then formed a cooperative group. And that began the story, really, of the Bevy Community Pub. We then started as a group to discuss what we wanted. And we wanted a pub, but we wanted, as our strapline very famously says, we wanted it to be more than a pub. And that's really, really important because that's our social enterprise. That's our community working. We opened in December 2015. So when we were closed again by the pandemic, we'd been open for about 5 years.
And very successful by the sound of it.
Yes, not without its challenges. Financially, it's always quite difficult. Where we do very, very well is in our community work. Do you want some examples of that?
Yes, I'd be interested to know what sort of groups meet there.
Well, any groups can meet there. Any community groups, we give them free meeting space. But one of the regular things that we've set up since we've been going are lunch clubs. And we have our flagship Friday Friends group that are an independent group that run by local people that have been involved in the pub forever and a day. So that has been interesting because although we now call ourselves a community pub, what I realise is that some people have been doing that for years. But yes, yeah, so Friday Friends, they run a senior lunch club. I run a senior lunch club that I bought from the Bridge Education Centre when it closed down. Another colleague, Laurie, runs a dementia group. Besides that, we do all sorts of other things, which might be free cooking courses for children. We do art groups. The university uses to run their brains at the Bevy. We've got darts teams, befriending, get back to work schemes. So over the years, many, many very different groups. But I suppose our core groups are our older people groups.
So as you say, it is an awful lot more than a pub. It's very much a meeting place for the community. But do you provide all the services that a normal pub would provide?
Yes, we do. You know, we've got pumps and barrels and beers and barmaids and bar managers, and we do all that.
And do you open normal pub hours?
Well, up until the pandemic, we were opening normal pub hours, yes. Obviously, it's a huge question what will happen going forwards.
And do you have a paid staff?
Oh, yeah, we do have a paid staff, yes. When I was talking about the committee, that's the overall management. But we have a bar manager, and we have paid chefs and paid bar staff and cleaners. Yes, so the front of house pub work is done by paid staff. When I was talking about the committee, it's us that does a lot of the behind the scenes stuff. So we've got people doing finance, fundraising, organising events, looking after the maintenance, you name it. But that's all voluntary.
So it's a mixture of paid staff and volunteers then?
Yes, that's right.
Now, since the start of the pandemic, you've been running what you describe as a Meals on Wheels service. How did that come about?
Oh, well, we were very lucky, Richard, because, like I was saying to you, the Bevy is very well connected with the community and runs lots of community events and services. So on the day that we decided we couldn't run our lunch club because it wasn't safe, we also decided that would be the day we closed our pub. As it happens, coincidentally, we had just done a fundraiser to do something called Bevy Bites. We were trialling taking food out to the community, but it was a bit more of a commercial angle on that one. Anyway, they'd done a small pilot, but basically that put us in a position where we had all the machinery, if you like, in place. So we had the kitchen, we had the staff, and then importantly, like Friday Friends and myself with Bridge the Gap, we had all the connections with people. So we decided that we would trial it and see if that's what people wanted. So I just got on the blower, really, and phoned everybody up and said, I know you're going to be isolated and you're going to be at home. Would you like a meal? We're going to do it three times a week. You can have it every day or you can have it once a week, whatever you like. So that's how we started that first Friday, the 20th of March. We hit the road running, really. We thought, let's see what happens and what are the challenges. I think 18 meals we served that day. And then over the following weeks, it sort of climbed up to an average of 45 to 50 meals each day that we do delivery. Like I say, that's on a Monday, Wednesday and Friday. And that was made possible by the fact that we had a kitchen, that we had the connections with the community. And from that first few sessions where we were trying things out, we've worked out a good process now. And people have been wonderful. They've come forward to volunteer. Of course, it's nice for people to eat nice food and not to have to worry. The meal obviously is what stimulated everything, motivated everything. But for us, the really important thing is that we have eyes on people. All the deliverers will always ask people if they're okay. So if something is flagged, which has been people being a bit troubled, I can contact people in services or their family to help sort things out.
What sort of people are making use of the Meals on Wheels service?
Well, that's really interesting, Richard, because like I said, we started off talking to the cohort of people that come to Friday Friends and Bridge the Gap, which are very typically over 60, are in the main over 70 and quite a lot in their 80s and 90s. So there are people that have been retired. They are people with health issues, mobility issues, not all of them, but a lot of them. However, over this bit of time with COVID-19, I've seen that the list of people we are serving diversify. And I have got a number of families and younger people. I've got a young couple with a baby. I've got a couple with a child that are having to lots of situations. I've got single mums who are working and really under pressure. So it's much more diverse, in fact, now. We've got a much broader church using our services, which is, frankly, very humbling. And I'm very pleased to be able to offer that. Because what's happened, which I haven't explained, is we have a recommended donation of £4 for our meals, but also the great people in the committee have been out there getting grants from local council and other organisations, and they've put a donate button on the Bevy. And people who want to support us have been giving us money, which enables us to give free meals or much subsidised meals to a lot of people, whether they're elderly or whether they're families. And I just want to say a thank you to all those people that have made that happen, because I feel in a very fortunate position that I can say to people, it's okay, don't worry about the money. Would you like a meal?
But some people do actually pay for the meals if they can afford it.
Some people do actually pay for the meals, and actually it's the older people that are very insistent, very interestingly. I think probably financially, on a very practical level, they've been the least affected by COVID-19, i.e. their pensions are set and they're still coming in. Everybody's making a contribution where they can. That's the main thing that I stress to people, is only do it if you can afford it.
You've said you've got quite a number of customers now. Are you looking for any more, or are you able to take any more, come to that?
We feel like we could take more. So if there is anybody out there who would like a meal from the Bevy, if you live in the Lewis Road corridor, we'd be more than happy to serve you.
And how do they get in touch with you?
Well, basically, they can phone us, and our phone line is 01273 281009. At the moment, we're serving people in Morecambe, Bevendene, Bates Estate, and some of the Coombe Road area, and Coldean a little bit. So we have got quite a reach.
And all that information is on your website, isn't it?
And all that information is on our website, and it gets updated. And if you sign up to the website, you get regular updates. I think that's the other lovely thing that we've been able to do, because we know a lot of the people and we've got connections and we've been doing this. Our fundraisers in the team have done really well, and we've been able to do things like send out large print crosswords and word searches and Sudokus and jigsaw puzzles that we've managed to buy from some of the money that we've raised. So we're trying to make sure that people stay stimulated as well as having a nice meal.
And you've managed to move some of your activities online, such as, I gather you run a pub quiz online.
Yeah, that's right. Every other week we've been doing that, which is quite recent. And it's deaf-friendly as well. So, yeah, we're trying to keep the activities going.
Are you looking for more volunteers?
Well, anybody that's interested in doing something, do get hold of me, because what's happening is, so for example, where a deliverer might have been able to come in 3 days a week, because they may now be going back to work some of the time, they may only be able to do one or two sessions. We're very reliant on volunteers, and we've had volunteers in the kitchen and doing delivering, and we'll always find a volunteer something to do.
Okay, well, it sounds as if you and your team are doing an excellent job there in a difficult situation. So thanks very much, Helen, and keep up the good work.
Thank you, Richard, for your time and giving us some air, and hello to everybody out there. And do get in touch if you're interested in having some food or getting a meal for one of your loved ones that you can't see. It could be a treat once a week, couldn't it?
It could. Thanks, Helen.
Thanks very much, Richard. Lovely to meet you.
If you'd like to find out more about the Bevy, you can go to their website, which is www.thebevy.co.uk, or you can phone them on Brighton 281009. That's 01273 281009. Now, before we go on, I've got a couple of items of news for you. The first item concerns the times at which this programme, At Home This Morning, is broadcast. For the last few weeks, we've been going out at 12 midday on Wednesday. But as from June the 23rd, we'll be returning to our normal time slot of 11 o'clock on Tuesday morning. That's because of changes in Radio Reverb's schedule, caused by their coverage of the coronavirus lockdown. Our two other broadcasts during the week, which are on Thursday morning at 9 o'clock and Sunday morning at 8 o'clock, are unaffected. So just to repeat that, we'll be moving from midday on Wednesday to 11 o'clock in the morning on Tuesday, and our other broadcasts will remain the same. The second item of news concerns the activities of Digital Brighton and Hove, who we spoke to on the programme 4 weeks ago. You may remember that one of the things that they're doing during the pandemic is to lend out tablet computers to people and organisations in order to help them to get online. And we've just heard that they've got a new consignment of tablet computers in stock, available for loan. If you're interested, either as an individual or as an organisation, in borrowing one of these computers, you should get in touch with Digital Brighton and Hove. And here's David Skerr to tell you how to do it.
If they are able to access this webpage, they can go to www.digitalbrightonandhove.org.uk. On this online page, there's some information about how to express interest in the tablet loan scheme that we're rolling out. And they can just fill in a quick form, and then we'll receive that at our end, and we can get in touch with them. For your listeners that aren't online, they can call us on 0747 594 6084. And if there's no answer, they can leave a message with their name, phone number, and the kind of support they need, and we'll make sure someone calls them back as soon as possible.
That was David Skerr of Digital Brighton and Hove. And that brings our programme to an end for this time. Thank you very much for listening. I hope you've enjoyed everything you've heard in this edition of At Home This Morning, our magazine programme for older listeners. There'll be another edition in a fortnight's time, and that'll be presented by Chris English. And I'll be back with you again in 4 weeks. And it only remains now for me to wish you all the very best until we meet again. Goodbye.